This was my first time going, and I was extremely thrilled with everything that was provided, from the materials to being able to meet the speakers and authors of books.
Ben from Green Bay, Wisconsin, talking about the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Thank you for putting on the conference and providing the educational material that we can use in our world today.
Learn more about our fall Making the Case conference at issuesetc.org.
Gender studies isn't even close enough to science to catch its cold. I mean, they're two very different things, and never the twain shall meet.
They survive with an abortion-centered business model. They cannot thrive, and they can't move into the future if they stop doing abortions, which is what we've said all along. Stop doing abortions, and our argument is over.
He went away sad. That's not a bad thing. Jesus was the master catechist, and we don't say he did a bad job because the man wasn't converted. Well, Jesus was faithful.
Dr. Connors, are you Lutheran?
Yes, I am a Lutheran. But please, call me Frank.
When driving to and from work through the Las Vegas Valley and den of iniquity, I always hit the jackpot by listening to Issues Etc.
It is part of the parlance of the industry. Major League Baseball is probably the most blatant example, but every professional sport has it as part of its parlance. When it's the post-game interview, when it's the time to talk about your career, you're getting an award, you've just won the Super Bowl, or perhaps the playoffs, what do you say into the microphone? Whether you're a player, more often players than coaches, but usually the players will say something about God. Well, first I want to thank God, or first I want to thank Jesus Christ, my Lord and Savior. There are religious gestures that are associated with Major League Baseball, and it seems to be part of the game, part of the superstition of the game, or the faith of the players. And how is it covered by a wing of journalism that is dedicated entirely to sports? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, October the 4th. We're going to be talking about media coverage of faith and sports. Terry Mattingly will be our guest. A little bit later, Joy Pullman, managing editor of The Federalist, will be our guest to talk about social media reaction. It's all over the board. Two allegations against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. Katie Shoreman will be with us after that. We'll discuss forgiveness and regret. And then Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us to begin a series on the Christian conscience in the Old Testament book of Isaiah. Joining us to talk about media coverage of faith and sports, Terry Mattingly. He's a regular guest. He's senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Sports journalists, do you think they regard expressions of faith by players of professional sports as just part of the sport superstition that goes along with baseball, football, all the other professional sports?
I think there's several layers to that question. And one is, in many cases, the writers know a lot about the private lives of some of these players. And I think in some cases, they know that some of the folks who are doing all of this God talk and have a lot to talk about with faith, they know a lot more about their actual private lives. And I think that leads to some cynicism about it. At the same time, when you say gestures, the first thing that it probably leaps to listeners' minds is like someone going out to receive a punt in a football game and making the sign of the cross. And they're thinking, that's superstition. He's asking for it to be able to run this back for a touchdown. When actually, in that sort of circumstance, the making of the sign of the cross by a devout Roman Catholic would probably be asking for protection, that he's not hurt on this play, would be what that's all about. Then, of course, you have born-again players making the touchdown and pointing to the sky, which a secular reporter would immediately say, that's like, thank you, God, for giving me that touchdown, which to some degree is what some of the players are saying. But at the same time, I've interviewed through my career some really, really important figures in sports. The two that leap to mind would be Tom Landry, the very overtly Christian, the legendary coach of the Dallas Cowboys all those years. And another example would be, I think, probably the greatest coach in any sport in the history of the United States of America would be John Wooden of the UCLA men's basketball program. Very devout Christian. Both of them talked about the fact that they hardly ever saw the real believers on their teams do anything other than pray that people were able to play their best and play without getting hurt. This whole idea that sports writers have that people are out there praying for victory, that's probably not what's happening in the lives of most of the believers. So I would say that it's not just superstition. I think to some degree, a lot of journalists view religion and sports with a degree of cynicism beyond skepticism.
You have written recently about a Sports Illustrated article on Chris Davis, poor guy, who has been deeply affected by what in Major League Baseball is called the shift. It's a rather recent development of how the manager will move the infield around, sometimes the outfield around, to stymie players. And boy, has he been stymied.
Who pulled the ball.
Right.
The left-handed batters in particular who've spent their whole career grooving a swing to hit the ball with hard contact to pull it to right field. And so they stack the entire defense there. And in Chris Davis's case, a very public Christian, a very outspoken Christian, and he's just endured one of the 5 to 6 worst seasons in the history of Major League Baseball, let alone by a player who just a couple of years ago was an all-star and led the majors in home runs. And if you calculate the shift, he had an average to a slightly bad year to average year if all those runs batted in had occurred. But what's happened, and the Sports Illustrated article did a good job of focusing in on this, which was, in his case, failure led to depression and to what can be called a spiritual crisis. Because what Chris Davis wants to know is, what does God want me to learn from this? Why is this happening? What have I done? You know, and anyone who is a serious believer has faced times in their life when things are going bad. And you've kind of trained yourself to say, all things work to good for those who, you know, so you're sitting here going, what am I supposed to be getting out of this? Now, what I criticized about the article actually did a much better job with the spiritual crisis than most professional coverage of sports that I've seen. But I thought they passed up an opportunity to call up the chaplain of the Baltimore Orioles. Now, I believe currently the chaplain of the baseball team is a Roman Catholic priest, and Chris Davis is an evangelical Protestant. But I guarantee you that chaplain knows Chris Davis is pastor and knows what church he goes to. And I thought it would have given added depth to actually admit that this story of guilt, you're being paid millions of dollars to play this game, and now you're playing it horribly. So you have this issue of anger and depression and guilt settling in. Well, they spotted the fact that this had a spiritual dimension. I think they could have nailed it down better by actually having someone who could come in and discuss this in spiritual terms, especially if this was a pastor who had worked with a lot of athletes before. Because can you imagine the pressure that's on players? I mean, you know, this is why we see players acting out sexually. You see alcohol problems. You have obvious cases of drug abuse. Professional sports, it's hard to imagine a more high-pressure environment. Yet at the same time, you have large numbers of religious believers in professional sports. I've often wondered why that is. I think part of it is the ministry is dedicated to sports because we love our sports heroes, and a lot of churches and a lot of people focus on ministry to athletes, so they have opportunities to express their religious faith, and it seems to me that they go one way or the other, that our athletes tend to be either really party-going, secular, wild, living people, or they tend to become two of my greatest sports heroes growing up. One was Roger Staubach of the Dallas Cowboys, a devout Roman Catholic, family man, large family, the whole bit. And the other, the great Chicago linebacker, Mike Singletary, who I actually knew him at Baylor. And, I mean, this is, you know, a family man, large family, very articulate, very strong Christian. So you tend to get these people on both sides. Are you familiar with the case of Philip Rivers? Do you follow the NFL very carefully?
Not at all.
Well, Philip Rivers is the all-star level superstar quarterback of the LA Chargers. And Philip Rivers is a devout Roman Catholic and has 8 children. And a number of years ago, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway wrote a piece at Get Religion, and I think this was the piece in which she coined the term fecundophobia, people who are phobic about people who have lots of kids. And people were mocking Philip Rivers for the fact that he has 8 children. And he was interviewed, and someone said, well, are you guys done having children? And Philip Rivers said, you know, like, well, I hope not. And everybody laughed about that. And Molly pointed out that nobody laughs about the fact that there are NFL players who have 8 kids with like 6 different women. That's considered like a normal part of the sports scene, regrettable perhaps, but normal. Whereas Philip Rivers is the subject of laughter and derision for being a Roman Catholic with a large number of children. And I've always thought of that as another example of a very serious sports story that nobody takes into account. You don't just have the pressure. You have these professional athletes who are men and women. You have them on the road large periods of time, and like at baseball especially. They're away from their families. They have astonishing levels of hero worship and temptation. They are followed by roadies. They have all of this stuff going on. There are interesting, serious stories related to how religious believers manage to live out their faith in the midst of all that pressure and temptation. And you hardly ever see it show up in mainstream journalism. And I think that's regrettable. I think these are very interesting stories.
Terry, I'm intrigued by what could be a really big story. You talked about kind of the either or. Either these guys tend to be pretty devoutly religious, or and then that is reflected in the lives they live, and they are sometimes open to derision for it, or they just tend to extend their adolescence and with millions of dollars tacked on. And I wonder if a sophisticated sports writer might explore why it is usually either or with these guys, why you do find so few guys in the middle, regardless of what the sport may be.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And my theory on that is that it's a response to the fierceness of the pressure, that sports can be such a make-it-or-break-it environment. And the sense of failure must be so crushing that people are driven to either wrestling with this as a matter of faith and turning to other people for help. There are professional Bibles, there are Bible studies and ministries and prayer groups, to my knowledge, in every single professional locker room in the world of sports. There are people, and that's part of the hero worship of it, but at the same time, these men and women are under astonishing pressure. So how do you medicate it? If you medicate it negatively, you can meditate it with either alcohol or diversions of other sorts, or you swing the other way and you turn to religious faith. Well, obviously, I think that's a more positive reaction, but I think what you're hinting at is that both of those reactions are reactions to the unique pressures and failures of sport. And then you bring in the aging process. You know, hardly anybody quits sports on their own terms. So this gets you into we haven't even discussed the injuries. Can you imagine the levels of depression and struggle for these people that suffer career-ending or potentially career-ending injuries? That's a whole nother thing to discuss. And then their marriages are another issue. I mean, I know there are chaplains who are involved in marriage counseling for a lot of these people. And then there's simply a statistical factor. A lot of the most outspoken Christians in the NFL and in the NBA in particular are African Americans who come from either Baptist or Pentecostal background. But then you have the flip side of that would be the Latino Catholics. And then you have high percentages of these ethnic groups in certain sports, and their religion tends to come with them. And then the born-again ministries tend to affect primarily people coming out of college sports, and then they carry that with them into the pros. I keep an entire file in my computer on this, and I think at Get Religion, we see the missing spiritual element in sports stories to a degree that's even greater than stories about things like politics or the arts or whatever. I think you hit on something with your first question, which is I think a lot of sports writers have either been told not to get into this stuff. It could also be these days, when in an age when religion and politics is so controversial, it could be that a lot of public relations professionals attached to professional football teams and basketball teams maybe don't want their people asked about religion or talking about religion because they're afraid that might offend some of the people in their constituency. I know that there had been a lot of controversy. Tim Tebow obviously leaps to mind, but my hero, Mike Singletary, was controversial in a lot of settings because he was so outspokenly pro-life. Well, can you imagine being outspokenly pro-life in modern Chicago? Can you imagine being openly conservative and outspoken on moral and social issues playing for a team in San Francisco? Or the Golden State Warriors, you'll have a number of very outspoken Christians on their team, right in the middle of one of the most culturally liberal cities in America. I can imagine that their teams don't want religion talked about. So it's another sign of how controversial religion is, not just in our media, but in our politics and in our public culture, that these athletes, it's probably dangerous to talk about their faith, but they keep doing it anyway.
With about 30 seconds here, you know these people are signed for millions of dollars and their lives are managed down to the things they eat, how much they sleep. Everyone's keeping track of all of that. And I'm thinking about Major League Baseball. Would it also be a great story of whether or not some teams are saying, look, we care about your marriage and your well-being, and maybe you ought to see the chaplain, or maybe you ought to go to church, that kind of thing, where they are having their lives managed. Do you think there's a story there?
About 30 seconds. there was a big story a number of years ago where a couple of people involved in sports management began to question if being a strong Christian took away your killer instinct. Were the Christians too nice to be superstars and stuff? And you know, the NFL made the decision to no longer show the prayer circles at the end of the game. Well, this happened quite some time ago. But the players would come out from both teams and kneel in the middle of the team and pray for each other after games. And you'll never see that happen on TV now. I think there are some people that think that this is like unseemly, that these big, strong hulks of men go out there and get down on their knees and pray with their arms around each other and stuff. I'm convinced that some of the controversy about the kneeling in protests, some of those guys are kneeling and praying for racial reconciliation. Is that the same thing as a political protest? There are big and interesting stories here. And I would just encourage reporters to have courage and ask the questions, because I think you'll find some interesting answers.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, talk with you again next week.
You bet. Talk to you then.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Joy Pullman, managing editor of The Federalist. She has been tracking some of the social media reaction, that's a good neutral term for it, to the allegations against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh. We'll see what she found right after this.
Western civilization, infant baptism, transgenderism, a legal case for the resurrection, the First Amendment, revisionist history. Your favorite guests will address these topics at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Dallas Days, Fort
Worth Nights. Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The Lord is our shepherd, and we are the people of his pasture. Why then do we still suffer in this life? Disease, loneliness, persecution. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm collaborating with Cheryl Swope, Molly Hemingway, and a host of literary friends in He Restores My Soul, a book that takes an honest look at hardship and heartache in light of God's promises found in his word. He Restores My Soul is now available at emmanuelpress.us, emmanuelpress.us.